Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. We're delighted that you're with us today. And we really appreciate this awesome opportunity to share with you the ancient Aramaic technology of forgiveness. Our process is one of working to support the restoration of human life to every mind, heart, and being on the planet. And we have a simple experiential definition of human life, and that is, hold a newborn child. When you hold a newborn, you know exactly what a human life is. It is this awesome presence of love. And our offering to each of you is that every moment of your life where you're not living with that awesome presence of love, within your physiology, experiencing the delight, the joy, the aliveness of that, then you have a problem. And your problem is one of a lack of forgiveness. Now, most everyone says, no, my problem is my spouse. My problem is my child. My problem is my mother, my father, my government, my, and on and on and on goes the list. But our offering is that if your physiology is not embodying your human life, that awesome presence of love, it's because you're disconnected. Now, I love to tell a story about the rose and the butterfly. And imagine that we give this rose and butterfly each an ego. They meet, they fall in love, and they have this wonderful time together. But one day, the butterfly up and flies away. The rose, knowing that the love of the butterfly is the most important thing in its life, uproots itself to give chase. What's going to happen to the rose? It's going to die. And it dies for no other reason than it has disconnected from its source. When you and I, who started out as this awesome, active presence of love, were forced by the world and by our lack of awareness to disconnect from that presence of love, we moved away from a human life and put into our physiology a series of energies that never belonged in physiology. When we put an energy into physiology that does not belong there, physiology says, ouch, that hurts. The singular cause of pain, presence of an energy that does not belong in the cell, that inhibits the function of the cell. And we live in a world that drugs us from literally, oftentimes now, prior to day one. And what drugs do is they anesthetize against pain. They heal nothing. Every drug is a disease disguised as a cure. They say we have side effects from drugs. There are no side effects. Every drug causes diseases. How can something that causes a disease heal a disease? Not possible, but it can mask the symptoms. So however you cut it, drugs are about controlling the pain of the energy in the cell that doesn't belong in the cell, and the cell screams out in pain wanting relief and wanting reconnection to its proper power supply. So pain is always a result of what's happening on the inside. And what is happening on the inside will never be resolved by changing something in the outside, and it will never be resolved with a drug. And you say, but Michael, what about real physical pain. Well, let's bring on our guest today. We've got a young man named John Ray, who I had the privilege of meeting. Gee, I'm not even sure how many years ago now, John, but it's several. And when we first started conversing, there was a challenge in your life. And the reason, of course, I asked you on the show is last week I just happened to call you to say hello after not talking with you for a couple of years, and you were sharing that you were writing a book about your experience of healing your back and dealing with the pain that basically laid you down to the point where you were, as I understand it, scheduled for surgery. You want to share with us, John, a little bit about the book that you're writing and what you do in your world today, and just tell us your story, John? Are you with us, John? Well, let me check with Jeannie. We're in two separate locations again. Hopefully my sound is coming through more clearly.
That's good. You need to be eating apples.
Michael?
Okay.
Michael, you're loud and clear.
Oh, good.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear, John. Welcome to the show.
Oh, good. Thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear that you're writing a book about your experience of healing the physical challenge of back pain, debilitating back pain. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? Well, John, if you're speaking, I can't hear you. John, are you with us? Well, we've got some technical difficulties, folks. Be patient with us. And let's see what's happening. Dr. Tim, are you still there?
Is anybody there? We're here, Mike.
Well, I'm looking for John. Are you with us, John? If everybody else would mute their phones, and let's see if we can get John Ray back on the line. Well, I guess we've lost John. So, Dr. Tim, are you there? Let's make sure we're still connected in here.
Hello? I'm here, Michael. I'm here, and
okay.
I can hear you. I could not hear John.
Okay, good.
Hello.
Hello, John.
John.
Okay, we can hear you now.
You can hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. I have no idea what's going on, but anyway. Yeah, the story basically, most of it occurred around 19 years ago, 1995. And I basically had a series of back injuries that started one with a car accident, and eventually one day, you know, I was mopping a floor and I felt a twinge in my low back, and went to the chiropractor and got a nice little snap, crackle, pop adjustment, and I was good to go. But right after that, there was a series of other back events that occurred. Doing Taekwondo, I hurt it again and had to get it adjusted again. And then another time during a camp out with my son, it got hurt again. And after a series of back injuries and events like that, it got to the point where I was in a lot of pain. And so somebody told me I needed to go walk in the water and that would help me. So I thought, well, okay, I can do that. So I went to a pool where I was living in Dallas at the time, and I started walking in the water, and it felt good.
Right.
And then after a while, I thought, well, maybe I'll try swimming, because I used to be a competitive swimmer. So I thought, well, let's see how that goes. So I started swimming down the pool, and feeling really good. You know, the blood is circulating, and I thought, wow, this is great. And then I thought, well, let me try a little butterfly. And so I started doing some butterfly, you know, with the big dolphin kick. And I got about halfway down the pool, and there was a loud snap that you could hear almost anywhere around the pool, so loud that people that standing outside the pool could hear it and came running over to the end that I was moving towards. And I somehow got out of the pool and got my way home, and that night I was in incredible pain.
So just to be clear then, so we're talking about a series, because one of the questions that people often ask about forgiveness work is, well, how could forgiveness help a physical injury? So you're talking about a series of a half a dozen different serious physical injuries that led to this snap that happened in your back and the back pain that you had.
Yeah, that's correct. You know, I'd had a series of injuries, and really over a period of about 20 years, but there was this concentrated time of a couple of months where just every week it seems like something would happen, it would get worse. And this incident in the pool was kind of the culmination of that. And I went home that night and did something that you're really not supposed to do when you have some inflammation, I guess, and I put heat on it and made it much, much worse. Literally, it was kind of like Dark Night of the Soul kind of thing, where I literally felt like I was crawling up the walls. And I woke up the next morning, there was this huge storm in Dallas that night, and it knocked down all the fences, all the big privacy fences around that part of Dallas. And I looked out the window and saw that and realized that I couldn't move without excruciating pain. It was kind of me and the fences were having a symbiotic relationship there. But in any case, you know, I went to the doctor, and they sent me to the Texas Back Institute, which is a pretty prestigious place in Plano, Texas. And they x-rayed me and MRI'd me and essentially told me that I had a massive herniated disc and sciatica. And what it looked like was, for 3 months, I had to lay totally flat on my back. No pillow, no anything. And if I didn't, it was just excruciating pain. And you mentioned about medications in your introduction, and I'm the type of person that doesn't take medications at all. And I was having to take very strong painkillers and sleeping pills just to be able to get through the day.
So, John, you're laying on your back for 3 months. How do you eat? This may seem a little crass. How do you use a bathroom? I mean, you have to get up, I assume.
Yeah, good question. Essentially, the way I got around was I had to crawl. I found that I could crawl with very little pain. I could not sit or stand for more than a minute and a half without excruciating pain. And so going to the bathroom and eating dinner and things like that were just massive ordeals.
Wow.
I was crawling around so much that I actually had calluses on my knees from doing that. But as far as cooking goes, you know, because I was single parenting my son at the time, and I would basically lay down on the kitchen floor and supervise while my son made dinner. And I would just tell him what to do, and he would do it, and then we'd go sit in the floor in the living room to eat. And what I would have to do is I would have to take a bite, and then after about a minute and a half, I'd have to lay down, wait about 5 minutes until the pain subsided, and then sit up, take another bite, and go back down again. That's how the meals were for 3 months.
Well, it doesn't sound like there's anything much more physical than that. So what happened?
Well, basically, you know, the career that I was in the middle of at the time was working in the computer industry as a programmer. And I was able to, my brother was able to hook and set up a sort of a workstation for me in the living room where I could lay on a bed and be working on my computer tied to my office computer. And I did that for, I don't know, about 10 hours a day. I wrote an entire order processing system that 400 people used and won all kinds of awards because I had absolutely nothing to do all day but lay on my back and work on this computer system. And I realized after a while that I was trying to just kind of hide from the pain as much as I possibly could. I didn't want to talk to anybody because whenever somebody called or anything like that, all I could talk about was the pain, and I just got tired of that after a while. And while I was doing my programming, I happened to have had some tapes and books around that I would listen to, and one of those tapes that I had, this was back in the day of cassette tapes. Some people may remember. A few months before this series of back injuries occurred, you had come into Dallas to speak at the Unity Church of North Dallas. And
right.
I had gone to listen to you, and I had gone to your series of workshops, Why Is This Happening to Me Again, and the one about relationships, and you did one about healing as well. I don't remember the name of it right now, but I had some of those tapes, and I would play them in the background while I was working, and then when I would take breaks, I would listen a little more clearly. And there was one thing that you kept on saying on one of those tapes, which was two words, love heals. You kept on saying love heals over and over again. And it got to the point, actually. What's that?
I was going to say, I think that's probably the Empowered to Heal workshop you were talking about.
Empowered to Heal, that's the one.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where I'd heard you say that on, because I was playing these tapes over and over again, I'd heard you say it about 100 times, and I was actually starting to get a little pissed off. And I was thinking, what in the world is he talking about that love heals? What does that mean? And
John, you're the first person who's ever gotten pissed off with me.
Oh, well, I guess there had to be a first. yeah. And so, after I had been going along for a while here in this mode of laying down and computer programming and listening to these tapes, the doctors at the Texas Back Institute told me that there was absolutely nothing they could do. They were trying to help me avoid surgery, because the head orthopedic surgeon was very clear when he said that 50% of the time or more, when you get back surgery, you're going to have to come back again sooner or later. And that didn't sound very good. but they tried putting, all kinds of therapies on me and treatments, and they gave me an epidural and cortisone shots and all kinds of things, and nothing helped. And so finally they scheduled me for surgery. And a few weeks before that, I finished writing this computer system and installed it from my bed at home. And I had absolutely nothing left to do to kind of hide from my situation anymore. And I remembered those worksheets that you had done in the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop. And, I thought when I first heard you talk about that and you We did a sample sheet in the workshop. I thought, you know, that makes sense. That's really good. And when I came home, I just put it on the shelf and totally forgot about it. And at this point
here, the first one that's done that too.
At this point, when looking at surgery 3 weeks away, I didn't have much left to do. And somebody had given me a book by a guy named John Sarno, who had said that 98% of all back surgeries were unnecessary if you could eliminate the stress or at least relieve the stress and increase circulation. So I thought, well, I'll hire a massage therapist to come into my home and work on me. And somebody told me to get a craniosacral therapist to come in, and so I did that. And then I thought, well, what do I do about letting go of emotional stress? Because he had said that it's not just physical stress. You have to let go of emotional stress, too. And I thought, well, how do I do that? And then I thought of your worksheets. And I pulled them down off the shelf and dusted them off. And I thought, well, I have absolutely nothing left to do, nothing to lose. I'll go ahead and do some of these worksheets. So I started doing one. On the first one, I think, was on my dog. My dog was going to the bathroom where he wasn't supposed to. And so I did a worksheet on him and allowed the emotions and you know, feelings to come up, anger that I was feeling about my dog doing what he was doing, and I did that worksheet. And then I did another one on my son. He was getting in trouble at school. And then I did another one on my ex-wife, whom I had just gotten divorced with a few years earlier. And I started doing some on my mother and my father. And within a very short period of time, I started noticing myself doing things that I had no reason to know why I was doing them. And I went out to my son's jungle gym and I started just hanging from his jungle gym. And I didn't even know why I was doing that. And I started laying out in the sun, in the June Dallas sun, just laying out there and sweating. And I didn't even know why I was doing that. And
Intuition and guidance.
Yeah. Something had kicked in. And then I took your words, love heals. And I thought, well, you know, I have nothing to lose. I have no idea what that means, but I'm going to try it out. I'm going to give it a shot. And so with my minute and a half of time that I could stand up, I stood up and looked in the mirror from time to time, and I would look at my own eyes and try to connect with a feeling of love. And I did that over and over again. And then as my son would come into the room where I was, I would focus on connecting with that space of love while he was there in the room. And same thing when my dog came in the room, and same thing when, you know, the people that were fixing the roof came in the room, and my ex-wife. And I just found myself connecting with this space of love, and it got easier and easier to do. I could do it pretty much instantly. And that connecting in conjunction with the doing the worksheets and letting go of a lot of anger that I had held on to over a period of years with my ex-wife and with my parents and with the body work of the people coming into my house and working on me, about 5 days before the date of the surgery, I noticed that I could actually sit for 5 minutes without pain. And that may not sound like a lot to, you know, somebody listening to this right now, but for me, that was nothing short of miraculous. And I thought to myself, wow, I'm going to see what this feels like, see if this continues tomorrow. And I took one less pain pill the next day. And I noticed that I could still sit for 5 minutes without pain. And I thought to myself, well, if this continues over the weekend, I'm going to cancel the surgery. And it did continue over the weekend, and 2 days before the date of the surgery, I called up the Texas Back Institute and canceled the surgery. And the head orthopedic surgeon there, Dr. Rashbaum, he called me into his office, and I went in there, and he checked me over, and, you know, the MRIs are clear as day. You could see the what they called the massive herniation very clearly with the naked eye. And he looked me over and he said, John, I don't know what you're doing, but whatever it is, keep doing it. And I did. I kept doing it, and I kept doing worksheets. And I kept on. What's that?
Did he ask? One of my experiences is that I've heard that from many people when their doctors say, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. But only in one or two cases have I ever had someone say, and then my doctor asked me what I was doing. And the two responses that come after they were asked were, he just poo-pooed and said, that's stupid, or he was actually interested. But it's just been so rare to have someone who's actually interested from that medical perspective on what real healing looks like.
Yeah, he was really not interested in knowing what I was doing. You know, this was actually the head orthopedic surgeon there, and busy guy, walked around with a little handheld tape recorder, which wasn't even very common back then, just went from patient to patient relatively quickly. So no, he didn't want to take the time to find out about it, but he was open-minded enough to realize that something was helping, and that my course of action to cancel the surgery was the right course of action. And so I'm grateful for that. And he put me on a course of physical therapy. And then a few months later, my son was going to a Boy Scout camp. And I all of a sudden had some time off that I didn't know exactly what to do. And you were having one of your workshops up at Heartland on Bull Shoals Lake in Missouri. And I went up there and immersed myself much more deeply in your teachings about forgiveness and, you know, understanding more about letting go of the stuff that, you know, I'm carrying around with me. And with that, I was able to kind of support and reinforce this healing process. And I hear some whistling, but I don't know what that is. And as I reinforce that healing process,
maybe Jeannie can mute anybody else that's on the line so John's clear.
I was able to get to the point where when I left Heartland,
well, we lost it, John. Jeannie, did you by chance hit John's button? I can't hear you, John. Give me a second here. Let me go ask Jeannie if she knows what's going on.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, John.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Okay, good. So I'm not sure exactly where I got muted, but in any case, by the time I left Heartland, my back was in better shape than it had been for 20 years earlier, and it still is in good shape to this day.
So did you stay at Heartland for a 9-day intensive?
I think it was a little bit longer, maybe like 11 days or 14 days. I think it was a laws of the living.
Yeah, laws of living. Sometimes they do 16 days. Michael will be back in just a minute. He went to check with Jeannie about why. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. we're all back. Thank you. So John, at the end of the intensive, I missed what you said about what happened.
Well, by the time the intensive was over, it was a Laws of Living intensive. My back actually was stronger than it had been for 20 years, and I'm, you know, just extremely grateful for the work that you're doing to share this with the world, because I think that it literally helped me to avoid surgery and possibly, you know, a lifelong issues with my back as a result of that. But to this date, my back is in great shape, and I actually help a lot of other people along the way now.
Well, we appreciate the fact that you from time to time teach the wise, this happening to me again, workshop, and spread it out and take it. You know, our commitment is every mind, heart, and being on the planet, and certainly a delight to have you on the team. Now, you're now a massage therapist and a cranial sacral therapist. You train people in the physical aspect of how this energy system works. So what would your explanation be from your training now, having moved on from the computer world?
So what would my... Oh, well, essentially, I went back to the computer industry after all that happened, and there was a feeling that I had, you know, that I was supposed to do something more. I started talking about what happened with my back and, you know, with my exposure to your work and how I was able to heal from that. And people started listening and actually asking me to teach about it. So I started teaching some classes and in Dallas. And then gradually, over time, I noticed that in the working in the computer industry, even though I was very successful and the companies I worked for were very good and they treated me very well, I noticed that all that sitting wasn't making it any better. And a few years later, I had a relapse. And it was almost like a light bulb went off in my head that I really was supposed to be moving in a different direction. And so I left the computer industry and changed careers, learned how to do body work myself, learned how to do craniosacral work, continued to teach classes on the forgiveness work and helping people to heal from their own stuff that they're carrying around. And it kind of grew and grew and grew to the point now where I train a lot of body workers and craniosacral therapists and still do the forgiveness work myself on a regular basis.
So, John, do you have a website yet for your book?
I don't have the website for the book. The book is not completed yet. It will be completed this year. I do have a website for my training, the bodywork training and the craniosacral therapy training, and that website is rayoflightmassagetraining.com.
Rayoflightmassagetraining.com. So people, when your book does come out, will be able to keep in touch. And you're on Facebook, so people could maybe connect with you on Facebook and keep in touch. I'm sure you'll be sending out Facebook announcements for your book when it's available. We'll be doing the
yeah.
same. We'll be supporting it 100%.
That's wonderful. Yeah, on Facebook it's the same thing. It's Ray of Light Massage Training. And, I do appreciate that because I do believe in the work that you're doing, Michael, in a big way. I'm not the kind of person that jumps into things lightly. And I've actually spent a lot of time telling people about how wonderful being exposed to your work has been for me and my life.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Dr. Tim might have a comment or two to make. Dr. Tim has worked with a lot of people in physical, and this is one of the reasons why I asked you to come on the show is so often people say, well, you know, if I have relationship problems or what, your work will be useful to me. But if I've got something that's real, physical, and, of course, my input to them is there's nothing real that's physical because there's no physical. If we understand Einstein, who says, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we've heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses, we realize there's no physical. And then, of course, Max Planck, as he's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics, says, quote, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world, he says, is made up of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. And so my input to anyone who's got any kind of dis-ease, there's no entity called disease, but any kind of dis-ease or any kind of pain or organic breakdown, start looking at the nested frequencies you're holding on to. And the word forgive, if those nested frequencies are active in you and causing pain, doesn't mean that whoever triggered that nested frequency in you should let them off the hook. It doesn't mean you should forgive them. That's got nothing to do with it. And God's never going to forgive you because forgiveness isn't about letting you or anybody else off the hook for what we've done. The word forgive is the word remove. You remove nested frequencies through the technology of forgiveness, and this genius from 2,000 years ago who knew exactly how to do it, and then I count myself as being so blessed to have come across the original Aramaic words of Yeshua to be able to understand in the original context and decode and be able to bring into this language exactly how to go in and remove the nested frequencies that disturb the apparent organic structure, the cell, the organ system, whatever it happens to be, and remove what didn't belong there in the first place. And we want to really be clear that that's the definition of forgiveness, the removal of what doesn't belong. And when we do, what happens is instead of diseasing, as this culture would have us do, we youth and we heal. We move in a different direction. And so the whole idea, and this comes right down to what we call physical aging. You know, there's a group called the De Courcy Clinic in Cincinnati, and it's got to be 35, 40 years ago that I heard someone quote from a research project that they did on aging. And here's what the De Courcy Clinic in Cincinnati said. Time is not toxic. Time has no effect on human tissue under any condition. It is a belief in the effect of time by those who subscribe to such a belief that acts as a poison. And so when we start looking at, you know, if I think I'm angry with the dog, I'm in denial because the minute I say the dog made me angry, I'm angry because of what the dog did, that's our definition of denial. When I side of me as though it's the cause of something inside of me, I'm in denial. And when I enter into that state of denial, then I have to hide the part of me from myself that is the nested frequency that's creating the noise in the tissue structure. And the noise will get louder and louder and louder until we listen. You know, the purpose of pain is to make our ears grow. And when I choose to learn and apply forgiveness, I remove those nested frequencies, and the tissue goes back to health. You can't remain in denial and bring your tissue structure back to health. And, of course, that applies in every arena we can think of. And you can't drug yourself enough to remove the nested frequencies that don't belong. You can't cut into tissue deeply enough to remove the nested frequencies that don't belong. And you can't eat a good enough diet to remove the nested frequencies that don't belong. When we start shifting the dietary regimen, that empowers us to be able to get in touch with what we've and or generations hiding from ourselves. It vitalizes us to be able to access those things. But ultimately, we need to engage in and consistently, persistently remove what never belonged. And so that's an awesome story, John. I actually, you know, I don't think I actually have ever heard in detail what all you went through. I know that when you were at that intensive that summer, you shared with me a little bit of the story, but I didn't realize the depth of what you'd been through with the back situation. So it's certainly a perfect example about, well, what about healing real physical things? So thank you, thank you, thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And I remembered your words about talking about healing and forgiveness as being something that we let go of, as opposed to something that's out there, that something somebody does to us. And those words really stayed with me. And you also talked about it in terms of healing the generations forward and back. And I've actually seen that in my experience with my parents and with my son. As I did my work, my own internal work, letting go of the stuff that I was holding on to more and more, I could see changes in my parents and my son. And it was very powerful for me.
Awesome. Well, is there anything else to share with us?
I would just say that if folks that are listening, to realize that, yeah, we do hold on to the stuff that we accumulate in our lives, in our tissue, in the physical body. And that's not just a woo-woo kind of thing that's just a new agey concept anymore. There's enough documentation and research that's been done at the National Institutes of Health and other places that show very, very clearly that we do hold stuff into the cellular tissue. And through work like the forgiveness work that Michael, you're teaching and is being spread around the planet, you can bring that stuff that's been lodged in the tissue, bring it to the surface and look at it and allow it to heal, allow it to dissipate and not affect the tissue and your life in the way that we're programmed to assume that it should.
Well, that brings an interesting question forward, John. So then doing this is all just fun and easy and light and no big deal, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. No, I think that when we have anger or grief or fear or things like that come into our experience, either as a baby or as a child or as an adult, it doesn't look good when it's going into the system. And I think that as it's coming up out of the system, sometimes it doesn't look very good either, but you have a sense that you're on the right path. You have a sense that this is going to help. And sometimes, it takes, how many times did you say it takes to forgive before it's all done?
Well, actually, they weren't my words, but if we go back to Yeshua and they asked him that question, how many of these darn words do we have to do? His answer in Aramaic was 77 times 70, which is not a literal number, but rather is the infinite number of worksheets that anyone's going to have to do until there is no nested frequency of sadness, grief, rage, frustration, fear within the structure. And, there's a whole community in the world that talks about how, we all want to be just love and light. And I think that's awesome because that's what we are. But the fallacy is that you can go around and pretend that all you have to do is be love and light and you never have to deal with anything. You never have to feel anything. You just play the game. And, of course, I identify in the book Why Is This Happening to Me Again, which, of course, people can go to the website and download free. I identify a disease called premature positive thinking, pretending that everything's well when it's not. And that's not what this work is about. This is real hardcore. You go in and you look at what's in that structure. If there's hate in there, then I would counsel somebody, feel your hate, be with your hate, and learn to practice bringing conscious, active, present love into the space of your hate. And when you do, guess what happens? Your hate dissolves, or your fear, or your frustration, or your irritation. And you know, kind of the good news and the bad news is that it all starts and ends with me. That's the bad news, because every time somebody gives me the look, or, you know, my spouse doesn't do what I want them to do, or my child misbehaves, and I go into some sort of something other than love, that's about me. That's the bad news. The good news is it's about me, and I can change it. I can presence love in it, and I can dissolve what never belongs. So what an awesome example, John, of taking hold of it and doing the work. This show's one we'll feature in the archives, so that anybody who's got the question about physical gets an opportunity to make that change.
Well, and you know what you say about taking responsibility for your state, your experience, as opposed to dumping it on somebody else, or that it's everybody else's fault, or the government's fault, or whatever. It's a very empowering thing. And that was another thing that you said initially that really struck me. You know, it stayed in my brain to the point where when I was in the middle of that back injury and I started doing worksheets on my ex-wife and focusing on connecting with love with her, I realized that I had a lot of anger that I had stored away related to our divorce. I had no idea that it could somehow affect my actual physical tissue, but as I did those kinds of worksheets and reconnected with love, I found a whole different perspective towards my ex-wife, that I could sort of accept her as she was. And the culminating experience of that was after that time when I was at Heartland and had come back to home, we had an incident where she got very angry at me one time and started yelling and saying all the things that in the past would trigger me, would push my buttons, and I would react unconsciously in a pattern that I was had a habit of reacting in. And instead of that happening, I listened to her go through this tirade, and I was able to kind of stay within myself and check in with myself and actually kind of scan myself and notice that I wasn't feeling the anger, and I wasn't feeling that need to defend and attack. And after a short pause, a short moment of silence, I looked at her and said, you know, I don't think I really deserve that, so I'm going to go now. And I left. And a few days later, she called me and apologized. And it's the first time in the history of our connection with each other she had ever apologized for anything. But it's you know, I had to go through all those worksheets, you know, and it took several of them to let that anger come up, as you said, to kind of take a look at it and let it go and realize that that's not who I am. It's just a disguise that I was carrying around. It's just a programmed pattern of response that I was doing, and I didn't have to do that anymore. And it was very empowering to take responsibility for my experience. And I'm very, very grateful to you, Michael, for teaching me that.
Well, I'm grateful that you're passing it on to somebody, and I love that word, it's just a disguise, or that idea, it's just a disguise I carry around, because that is it. And then, so let me just see if I'm clear here. So you change the resonance of anger in you, and after years and years and years of a certain kind of event happening within a relationship, she changed?
Absolutely.
Now, come on. You're not serious. Now, come on, John. I mean, people don't change because you change something, do they? Really?
It was a totally different reaction. It was something that I would never have predicted in my life. And yet it seemed totally appropriate and exactly what was supposed to happen because of the work I had done on myself.
You know, I remember when we first started in a kindergarten class, in a school in Delray Beach, Florida. We created a course called Lessons in Living. And the first lesson that we started out with the kids in kindergarten, and then we did grade one, and we did grade two, all the way up to grade eight. They had this full spectrum of classes. Actually, that was, that's before I moved to Heartland, so that's 27, 28 years ago. And they're still carrying on that course, but the first lesson that we taught was, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. And it always remains, if the dynamics of a relationship, of a situation are going to change, it always remains in the hands of the person who chooses to be conscious, who chooses to be responsible, and remove from themselves the thing that produces, the automatic responses, and brings the whole game into more conscious responses. And to me, the reason for doing this work, the reason why the last 45 years or so I've been doing it, and why Jeannie and I travel 6 to 10 months of the year, and why our workshops are free and we go anywhere in the globe we're invited, is because when we can reach to a critical mass of people who choose to truly, literally function as love and face everything in themselves that's less than that and remove it, we're going to reach a critical mass stage where the whole of humanity is going to have the opportunity to take hold of that idea without ever hearing a word about it. There will be an energetic dynamic. You know, when Yeshua 2,000 years ago says a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, he's not talking about bread. He's talking about humanity, and that we have the capacity to change what's happening not only within us but outside of us. What most people try to do is they try to bypass what's going on within and change what's happening outside. And there's no recognition or awareness that what's happening outside is a result of what's happening inside. So when people get the idea that every event that happens in their lives, there is something back of and superior to that. And what is back of and superior to every event in your life is there is an energetic request for that experience to come to you. Yeshua talked about a person who tries to change the outside without addressing and dealing with the inside, a house divided against itself. And he said, it can't stand. It just can't happen. So when I'm holding something inside of me and wishing that the result wouldn't come outside of me, I'm stuck in a particular kind of insanity that is not resolvable until I start to touch into the how-to of forgiveness. And by the way, for anybody who's listening, if this is making sense for you, you can go to our website, www.whyagain.org, and you'll see in the center of the page a white bullseye. If you click that bullseye, that will take you into a whole list of links. It starts out with chapter 24 of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? You can download the whole book elsewhere on the site as well. The worksheet, there's always the latest version of the worksheet there, and then there are half a dozen radio shows, and I'll make sure that we post this show right up there on the top with those links so that people have the opportunity to key in to this whole understanding. John, it's awesome to have you share it with us. And we appreciate it very much. And I did ask Dr. Tim a little bit ago if he had any comments or thoughts from what he's seen in his practice with people in physical, or so-called physical ailments. Tim, did you have anything to share?
Well, just that it's a delight to hear your story, and that I have the privilege of working with, I've lost count of how many people who've come into the office in physical pain in one form or another, some of them with as detailed a story as yours, and have them leave the office either on the mend or without pain, simply by doing this work. And it's something I've used for myself, and there aren't really words to express the gratitude for having come across this work. So thank you for sharing. It's delightful to hear your story, and glad to hear there's another person out there spreading the news and getting these tools into the hands of more and more people.
Well, you're very, very welcome. And thank you for letting me share it.
There's actually another gentleman that I had spoken to actually, he wrote to us on Facebook, and he's in attending in Brazil, and he was sharing that he had been in such excruciating back pain for 10 years that he was at the point where, over the previous 10 years, he'd been on 40 milligrams of Oxycontin 10 times a day for 10 years. And he tapped into and started to do this work, and I had tried to connect with him to have him get on the show today, but I don't think we've been able to reach him. But literally overnight, he cold turkey dropped Oxycontin and was pain-free. Overnight after 10 years. And, you know, so for people who talk about the real physical stuff, I just really want to make the point that there's nothing real, there's nothing physical, it's all energy. And when we start to see the world through the eyes of energy, we start to see differently. We understand. When you look through the brain cells of, oh, this is an energetic system, then you realize that there are certain things that lift the system up and certain things that tear the system down. Good idea to stay away from the things that tear the system down. We have a culture that just pounds in on us and sells us all kinds of things that tear the structure down. And they say that you have the right and the freedom and, you know, and it's crazy what the culture is being taught about how to create disease, the formula and the recipe for disease. And they stand up with the right to do it. Like, you know, if you look at, for instance, the amount of alcohol that flows in our culture and the orphans, the abused spouses and the abused children, the abused parents, the suffering families of people with alcohol, and yet, you know, we have a right to do alcohol. And then we hear people who are out there pushing pot, THC, and going, well, it's no worse than alcohol. Do you know how many millions of people are impacted by the alcohol and drug abuse? We're actually going to talk about that a little bit tomorrow. But how many people are just literally disastrously impacted by the use of alcohol? And then especially these kids who don't have a clue what THC is doing in their bodies and in their brains, what it's doing to their hormones, what it's doing to the brain cell. Is it worse than alcohol? Oh, my God. 1,000 times worse. And the reason is because alcohol is metabolized out within 24 to 36 hours. Pot's there for at least 8 days, half-life. We'll talk about that more tomorrow. We're down to the last few minutes. So, John, once again, your website is?
RayofLightMassageTraining.com.
RayofLightMassageTraining.com is where you can reach John and tap in, get on his mailing list, find out when his book's coming out. You can connect with him on Facebook. And we appreciate you, John, and thanks for sharing what you do and creating for yourself and the people around you the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift that we can each give the planet. Gracias.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Okay, blessings. Take care. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Sleep.